You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.
Welcome to the Daily Nationalist. Today's date is Tuesday the 15th of September 2020, and you're listening to me, Sven Longshanks, streaming at radioalbion.com. Well, I'd like to continue with this introduction to nationalism that I started yesterday and expand upon some of the points that I brought up. And the first one was where I referred to what we are doing here at Radio Albion as work, and of course it's voluntary work that we are doing, but really it's a vocation, which is a better term to use, I believe. And looking up the word vocation in Wikipedia actually has a lot of interesting information here about work and how man finds his fulfillment in the occupation that he has. So this is from Wikipedia here to begin with. Vocation, in the broader sense, includes the use of one's gifts in their profession, family life, church, and civic commitments for the sake of the greater common good. And of course, nationalism is all about the sake of the greater common good. That's what nationalism is. It's working towards the betterment of your people. And at Radio Albion here, we work to provide a counterbalance to the mainstream media, which seems to work to the detriment of the greater common good of white people. Many Christian theologians appeal to the Old Testament book of Genesis in regards to work. According to Genesis 1, human beings were created in the image of God, and according to Genesis 2, Adam was placed in the Garden of Eden to work it and keep it. Dorothy L. Sayers has argued that work is the natural exercise and function of man, the creature who is made in the image of his creator. Likewise, John Paul II said in Laborum Exercens that by his work, man shares in the image of his creator. So if you're not working, you're not fully a man. It's part of the natural function of man to work. So this is why the unemployed get depressed. This is why there was the saying in the German work camps of work will set you free, because man does find his natural fulfillment in working and contributing towards the greater common good. This was seen in a religious sense before. And nowadays we've come to have a society that tries to shirk doing hard work for some reason. People think it's good to get away with not doing as much work as you should be and doing the least amount of work as possible. And that's not going to bring people fulfillment. That's not going to enhance their lives in any way, just trying to avoid work and being a shirker. And that's against the nationalist ideal, which tries to put things in place so that man can reach his full potential. By that, I mean the brightest children should get the best teachers. The least bright children should be taught craft pursuits. They should be taught labouring, carpentry, manufacturing, how to create things with their hands. There should be a division of the resources between the people that are most likely to make the best use of it and the people that aren't. And today, we do the opposite of that. We devote most of our resources to the people that are least likely to be able to succeed. And I'm basing that on average IQs. If we look at around the world, if we look at the different races, they all have different average IQs. The lowest average IQ is about 68 or 70, and that's in some of the countries in Africa. And of course, in a multicultural country, where they are constantly trying to improve the educational results of the black children, they put more resources into trying to improve their educational results. Yet their average IQ predicts that they're going to struggle with that and they're not going to be able to achieve the highest results that are possible. The people with the highest average IQ are going to be the ones that are going to produce the highest possible results. And they're the ones that we give the least funding to. There aren't any programs to help poor white working class children. That would be seen as white supremacy or white privilege if they were given that. So we have this dysgenic society that rewards people who are least likely to be able to actually make the biggest contributions to society. And nationalism seeks to be in tune with nature and be in tune with the way that the world dictates to us we should be living to get the most out of it. And of course, this is why they've done away with grammar schools and streaming in the schools, because if you're going to just stream the brightest pupils, then those pupils are all going to be white. And it's going to be very obvious that there are differences between the races, because there are obvious differences between the races, not just what you can see. The difference in skin color is the least of the differences between us. The character of the races is the most important. And each of the races has a different character. They each have their good points and they each have their bad points. And mixing them all together, you just end up bringing out the worst points in everyone. Continuing with Wikipedia's article here on vocation. Christian theologians see the fall of man profoundly affecting human work. In Genesis 3:17, God said to Adam, "Cursed is the ground because of you. In pain you shall eat of it all the days of your life." Leland Ryken points out that because of the fall, many of the tasks we perform in a fallen world are inherently distasteful and wearisome. Through the fall, workers become toil. But John Paul II says that work is a good thing for man in spite of this toil, and perhaps in a sense because of it, because work is something that corresponds to man's dignity, and through it he achieves fulfillment as a human being. The fall also means that a work ethic is needed. As a result of the fall, workers become subject to the abuses of idleness on the one hand and overwork on the other. Drawing on Aristotle, Ryken suggests that the moral ideal is the golden mean between the two extremes of being lazy on the one hand and being a workaholic on the other. And again, this is interesting. This idea of the fall of man and the world starting out with a perfect beginning. We find this throughout the ancient religions. We find it in Hinduism. We find it in Greek myths, in Roman myths. There was a perfect age. And from there, things have all fallen apart. And this goes, again, it's the opposite of what we are taught with evolution and the idea that we began with a stone age and worked our way up into the brass age and the iron age. The traditional view was that we had a golden age and then a silver age and then an iron age. And where we are today is at the lowest we could possibly be. And this fits in with what we see, because all around us we see decay and entropy. The longer something is there, the more likely it is to fall apart, basically. And nationalism seeks to put a stop to the decay and try to improve our lot and improve things for us rather than giving in to our base desires and giving in to vice. Because what we see today, we see people trying to conform their reason to their passions. And really, it's your passions that should be conformed to reason. We can see that the perfect situation to bring a child up in is with a mother and a father and a family, and if possible, having siblings. Yet, because people aren't prepared to work at that, they think they should be happy all the time. So they end up splitting up and they end up having multiple partners. So first off, we end up legalizing divorce, and then we end up with contraception. We end up divorcing the sexual act from the fact that it's supposed to be there to produce children. And then the sexual act just becomes about pleasure. And if it's just about pleasure, why does it matter that you just have monogamy and you just stick with one person? Why not have multiple partners? And if you're going to have multiple partners, and it really doesn't matter that you stick with one person, why should it matter that you stick with one gender? Why not just have sex with as many genders as they are? Why not just behave like a homosexual? And we'll legalize that. And if you're going to legalize homosexuality, then you might as well lower the age of consent and legalize pedophilia, which is at the stage that we're at now, where we see in California, they've just changed the law so that somebody who is 10 years older than a child that has a sexual encounter with them will no longer have to sign on the sexual offenders register. And this is being trumpeted as progress. It's not progress, it's regression. It's a regression back to the animal stage. And this fits in with the fall of man. Nationalism stands against all of this, not for Christian reasons, but for natural reasons, because it goes against the natural world. To have sex and not produce a child afterwards is not something that we see happening in the natural world. The point of the sexual act is to produce children, and from that grows the culture that we have of marriage, the institution that we have of marriage, where you make vows, and this provides the best foundation for a child to be brought up in. And nationalism is all about the children and the descendants and working hard to improve the conditions of the descendants. And the best way that you can do that is to provide a stable family life for your own children. Children that are the result of broken homes, as much as they would wish not to repeat the same mistakes, most of the time they do end up splitting up with their partner, which is the last thing that they would want to do. If you speak to anyone that came from a broken home, they would tell you that it was absolutely horrible. And the one thing that they always wished for as a child was that their parents would have stayed together. And yet, because the parents didn't stay together, they end up repeating the same mistakes when they're adults and doing the same to their own children. And it's a horrible cycle to get into. And that cycle gets into because people seek to conform reason to their passions rather than conforming their passions to reason. So nationalism fits in with the moral order. It's not just racist liberalism. Racist liberalism, it just ends up in supremacy, and you just end up with all the degeneracy that we still have now, only you would have segregation as well. And that's not what nationalism is about. It's about the natural order. And we don't see any of this going on in the natural order. It's dysfunctional. If we do see it happening in the animal world, it is dysfunctional. I've got a little bit off course here. I'll just finish with this vocational bit here from Wikipedia. Some Christian theologians also draw on the doctrine of redemption to discuss the concept of work. Oliver O'Donovan points out that although work is a gift of creation, it is ennobled into mutual service in the fellowship of Christ. And in a nationalist society, when you are working, it should be seen as service to the nation. Whatever work you are involved in doing, it is going to benefit the nation. Where you have internationalism, the work that you are doing is going to benefit a corporation that could be a multinational corporation that is going to benefit individuals in maybe in another country somewhere. And that's not the best way to encourage people to be the best that they can possibly be. If people were to understand that the work that they were doing was going to be fed back into the wider community, then they would be far more likely to be the best workers that they could be. And nationalism doesn't seek to pit one class against the other. There's none of this workers of the world unite and overthrow the managerial class. The managerial class is needed just as much as the working class is needed. And what we need is class cooperation. And the way you get that class cooperation is by encouraging a healthy a healthy sense of identity, a healthy sense of shared identity with your nation. If you understand that the people that look like you are related to you, they are part of your extended family, then you're not going to be likely to abuse them by making them overwork, are you? And on the other hand, you're also not likely to try and skive out of work, because you understand that by not doing the best that you can, you're actually harming your own interests. We have to see the nation's interests as being the same as our own interests, because everything that we have is given to us by the nation. And if we pay that back, if we do what we can for our nation, if everybody was doing that, the level of happiness and the level of contentment would be so much higher than it is today. As I was pointing out yesterday, you can't make yourself happy. Only other people can make you happy by doing things for you, and you can make other people happy by doing things for them. So you have this constant feedback loop between the individual and the nation, improving the lives of the nation, and the nation improving the lives of the individual. And this is the way that society should be organized around, not the way that it is organized around today. Leland Ryken argues for seeing the call of God to a particular occupation as a reflection of the gospel call, and suggests that this implies vocational loyalty. Modern notions of a job become deficient, and the element of arbitrariness of one's choice of work is removed. And this is the way that it always used to be in the past. You would learn to do what your father's trade was. If your father was a carpenter, you would be learning all about woodworking from a very young age, and you would have guilds of these tradesmen, and that guild would be your equals. There was equality within these guilds. There wasn't an artificial equality throughout all society like they're trying to do today, but you did have a sense of equality within these guilds. If you needed to borrow money, you could borrow money off somebody else that was in the guild, and you would see them as being on an equal footing with yourself. Obviously, you wouldn't see those higher up the aristocracy as being on an equal footing with you, because they are higher up the aristocracy. Their worth would be more to the nation. We talked about this before with eugenics, and how somebody with a very high IQ, a genius level IQ, is going to be worth so much more to the nation than 100 people with a 75 IQ. The 100 people with a 75 IQ are never going to advance living standards, but just one genius with a genius level IQ could create all sorts of ways to improve the living standards of the nation. Again, eugenics is something that gets put down today, but it's just common sense. If we look at the way farmers work, they try to improve their stock all the time. And if we were to try and improve our human stock, our racial stock, take an interest in racial hygiene, then there would be far less disease around. There would be far less illness around. People wouldn't be suffering with congenital deformities. The brightest children, or the brightest families, they would be encouraged to have more children. Those that had alcoholism or other forms of disease within their family would be encouraged not to have children, and not to curse their children with that burden that they themselves have had to suffer under. People will say that eugenics is cruel, but it's really thinking about the child and thinking about the child's rights. Nationalism is, of course, against abortion. The mother's womb should be the safest place in the world for a child to be. The idea that a woman or a mother would murder her child, there just really is no reason for that. I mean, even if the child has been conceived in the most awful of circumstances, that child could always be handed up for adoption. Of course, there might be a change in this if it's known that the child is going to be severely mentally or physically disabled and not going to be able to enjoy life to the fullest. But essentially, abortion is a terrible thing. It's a wicked thing the murder of infants within the womb. And again, that's being encouraged today. It's promoted almost as a form of contraception. The gestation period is getting longer and longer, and they're even talking about abortion after a child is now actually born. It's absolutely horrific. And as nationalists, we stand against that. We stand against for the murder of the innocent unborn child. Well, I also wanted to get into what I talked about yesterday, where I said that we don't blame the Jews and we don't blame the blacks. And I pointed out that because to do that would show that we are inferior. But there's much more detail that can be gone into with that. Because we are nationalists, we take an interest in our history. You have to know where you have come from to know where you are going. And if you look into history, you can see that there are certain groups that have worked to advance their own interests. At the same time, they've worked to subvert our interests. The promotion of diversity and multiculturalism, that is not to our best interests at all. But it is to the best interests of minority groups, because the more different minority groups there are, the less one individual minority group is going to stand out. So it's only common sense that they would promote this sort of thing. And we do have minority groups that do this. Jews in particular like to promote diversity. They like to promote credit cards and banking loans. Jews are responsible for most of the pornography. If you look into pornography and how that first came about and the pushes to change the law and the companies that produce this stuff, then about 99% of them are Jewish. And all of this is done to subvert the nations that they live among, because it's of benefit to them to subvert us. Now, there are some people that would then blame the Jews for all these problems. At Radio Albion, we don't blame the Jews for these problems, because the Jews are a minority that we invited into our country, that our own government emancipated and gave them the rights to do these things. So if you're going to hold anybody to blame for this, you have to hold yourself to blame. We have to hold our governments to blame, our politicians, our people that emancipated the Jews and gave them these rights. And who made up those governments? Well, people just like myself and people just like you, the listener. So the way to put this right, the way to prevent this from happening, is to improve yourself. It's no good thinking you're going to change the world and you're going to change everybody else. The only person that you actually can change is yourself. And the more people there are that are nationalists in the country, the less likelihood there will be of more laws being put in place to subvert the nation and cause problems for the nation. And it's the same with the blacks. The blacks have a much higher propensity to commit crime than white people do. And when we look at the multicultural centres in the country, they are the centres with the most crime. Some people might then blame black people for this. But once again, why are the blacks here? They are here because our governments invited them in. Our governments changed the immigration laws. We allowed them in. If you're going to blame anybody for this, you have to blame the government. And then you have to look at the ethnic makeup of the governments that do this. And much as there are some Jews involved now and some Muslims, the vast majority of them are white. It was our people that did this to ourselves. It's a cop-out to blame these other races. Jews seem to naturally be subverters. Blacks seem to naturally be prone to crime. All we have to do is look at history to understand that. You're not going to be able to change these people. What we have to do is adapt to them. And the best way to adapt to them is to just segregate and have the different peoples living in their different areas. And then it wouldn't be a problem. Africans don't have a problem with other Africans in Africa. Jews don't have a problem with other Jews in Israel. Muslims don't have a problem with other Muslims in their Muslim countries. It's only in multicultural countries that we end up with all these problems living amongst one another, because we try to judge other people by our own standards. We think that we have a right to judge other people by our own standards because we've been told that everybody is the same. We've been told that all the races are equal. They're not equal. We do not have a right to judge any other race by our own standards because they are different biologically to us. It would be like a cat trying to judge a dog or a sheep trying to judge a wolf. It's not possible. And it arises because of this false idea that all the races are equal, which goes completely against everything that our eyes and our ears and our senses tell us. So how do we get to this situation? Well, the mainstream media likes to promote a lot of these ideas, and the mainstream media is in the hands of one of these minorities. And again, we can't blame them for doing this. This is just comes naturally to them. We can only blame ourselves for allowing that situation. If we had a nationalist state, we would be able to say it is illegal for any of the media organizations to be ran by anyone who is not of our ethnicity. And that way you would prevent the media from being in the hands of a hostile minority. I mean, even if the minority is not hostile, they are still going to be putting in that mainstream media, which everybody sees, they're still going to be putting the stuff in there that is going to be of benefit to them. And we don't get our news on the street corner anymore. We don't get our news from Mrs. Miggins in the pie shop. We get our news from the television, and we get our news from the big newspapers and the big newspaper websites. So it's very important that what is put on those websites and in those newspapers is truthful and doesn't denigrate the nation. It's thanks to this media that we've been given a false view of our history and a sense of guilt when we should really have a great sense of pride of all the gifts that we have brought to the world and all the gifts that we have brought to these other races. We have massively improved their lives. We should not be feeling guilt at all. If we're going to feel guilt, it should only be for things that we have done to our own people. We should be feeling guilty for what we have done to our own people. And then we can actually do something about it, because we can look at our individual selves and we can change our individual selves and we can improve ourselves. You know, I just wish that I had come across this information and this way of looking at life when I was a teenager. And the teenagers today are so lucky because we have the internet, we have this information that is there. And I just hope that the stuff that we produce here at Radio Albion and the stuff that's over at Patriotic Alternative and the other hosts and creators that are involved in British nationalism, in ethno-nationalism, I just hope that young people today find it and that it helps them and keeps them on the correct path, because it is so easy to get waylaid, because it is so easy to get distracted and end up wasting your life just on individual pleasures and drug taking and computer games and raving and belonging to gangs, and it's all just a waste of time. If your life is dedicated to improving your nation, that is the highest form of love that can ever be shown. That is platonic love. It's not lust. It is as far removed from lust as you can possibly get. It is the highest form of love, and it will give you the greatest contentment and at knowing that what you are doing is right and in tune with nature and in tune with God's plan for the white man. Anyway, I think I've covered just about everything that I wanted to today. I will probably think of more and possibly do a third part in this series tomorrow. Now, thank you very much for listening. I will be back tomorrow with more of the Daily Nationalist for you. God bless and hail victory.
You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.